Well, thank you all for coming out so early. This is talking about an evaluation project that was actually sponsored by the United Mine Workers of America Health and Retirement Funds. It was an industry-sponsored grant that ended as of December 31st last year. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors as well as my other co-investigators. This is a large project that took about 3 years to complete, and we have a 400-page final report, including appendices, and so I'm only going to present a very small portion of that today. But just to give you a little bit of background, the funds entered a demonstration project with CMS originally for Part B capitation in 1990. That extended to Medicare Part A risk sharing for their beneficiaries in 97. And then in 2001, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services created another demonstration project to subsidize prescription drug coverage for beneficiaries of the United Mine Workers Health and Retirement Funds. As part of that, they had to create what would become a precursor to the medication therapy management programs, and they called it an academic detailing or counter-detailing program, which became the prescription drug care coordination program that's referred to often as the MINRX program. And they also had to hire an independent academic evaluator, which ended up being the University of Alabama at Birmingham. So the stated purpose of the program is to help physicians caring for funds beneficiaries to advance the quality and effectiveness of drug therapy for frail elderly patients who receive care in a fee-for-service environment. So they remain fee-for-service. These patients are very old, have multiple comorbidities, and a lot of drug use. Some of the characteristics of this program is they wanted it to be physician-centered rather than patient-centered, although phase two, which they're now launching, is patient-centered. And trying to educate physicians about high-risk drugs, drug-drug combinations, drug-disease combinations. But one of their overriding philosophies is that you can't say that a drug is good or bad, that they don't like sort of the negative connotation that often comes with the Beers list of telling a doctor you can't prescribe that medicine, but rather to say it's up to the doctor's discretion given the patient's comorbidities and the other drugs that they're taking, and that only the physician is the one that can decide what treatment is best and not the PBM or the insurer. So their intervention, this MINRX program, was implemented in 8 counties in southwestern Pennsylvania, although the United Mine Workers has beneficiaries throughout the United States. What they did was they created this target drug and drug patterns list. It's a list of 26 drug patterns. Some examples are dementia with warfarin, dementia with insulin, warfarin and NSAIDs, furosemide in greater than 40 milligram dosages. And then they created a handbook that gives doctors strategies if a patient has one or more of these drug combinations. So one thing that the prescriber could do is change the prescription, change the dosage, discontinue the drug. Or another option would be to provide the patient or the patient's caregiver with information about how to manage drug risks. And then a third option would be to increase clinical monitoring, and also the funds allows the physician the option also of doing nothing. Of course, that sometimes presents a challenge in evaluation when, you know, one of the actions is you don't have to do anything. But one of the innovative things that the funds developed were these patient medication lists for each beneficiary in the practice. And this is an example of the patient medication list where each drug that was prescribed in a four-month period to the beneficiary is given to the patient's designated primary care provider, along with the name of every prescriber. So using claims data, they're able to find if a patient is getting prescribed these targeted drug patterns. The yellow ones that are highlighted would be one of the 26 targeted drug patterns. So the primary care physician can look at it, you know, see if people are getting drugs from other doctors that maybe they shouldn't be getting, or, you know, that the primary care physician wasn't aware of, and then can take action on that. And the doctors actually really do like having the names of other prescribers and have been known to call them up and say, my patient's taking this drug and you prescribed this, and, you know, to talk about ways to better manage the patient's drug therapy. Our specific aims of this evaluation project: assess overall effectiveness, outcomes, cost effectiveness, lessons learned and policy implications, and then implications for Part D. I'm only talking about the effectiveness component here. So we called these behaviors, these strategies that physicians could undertake to improve or to manage risk, safety-promoting behaviors. We identified process measures that were associated with each targeted drug pattern, in addition to those strategies that the funds gave patients. And so we looked to see what, for each targeted drug and drug pattern, how likely were physicians to perform one of these safety-promoting behaviors. So we were looking for a valid method to measure what the program's impact was. We know these patients are clinically complex, and we wanted to address that. Also, the program was evolving over time. They kept making changes to the targeted drug and drug patterns and materials that they would give physicians, and that created a challenge for evaluation. But these targeted or these safety-promoting behaviors are the strategies that could have been followed once the physician is aware that the patient has a targeted drug pattern. We used comparison groups of mine workers beneficiaries in West Virginia and Alabama, as well as a national comparison group for generalizability. The West Virginia-Alabama comparison group was very similar in both the network and sort of beneficiary populations to those in southwestern Pennsylvania. And we looked at likelihood of performing safety-promoting behaviors in the program versus those comparison populations. So using claims data, we looked at this separately for both comparison groups. We looked at whether or not there was a safety-promoting behavior within two quarters of a patient receiving a targeted drug pattern or having a targeted drug pattern. So the main effect was looking at time after program implementation by group. We also controlled for time in quarters, group program versus comparison, and age, sex, and comorbidity using a Charleston comorbidity. And we looked at all targeted drug patterns. We also looked within the subgroups. For example, you know, warfarin had its own subgroup. Beta blockers had a subgroup. And we also adjusted for multiple comparisons within the individual targeted drug patterns. So this is our patient characteristics for the intervention and comparison groups. Compared and see all there, because it was such a large number of claims and a large number of beneficiaries, many of these differences are significant in terms of age, ranging from, you know, 75 in the national comparison to, you know, 78 in the Alabama, West Virginia in the follow-up. And usually they had approximately, let's see, baseline, around two targeted drug patterns each, but that increased over three in the follow-up period. We had to track back and try and identify the targeted drug patterns, but the post or the follow-up or the targeted drug patterns that were identified by the funds for the intervention group and the comparison group, we had to identify the targeted drug patterns as well. And you can see with number of hospital days, quite a rather sick population. So the only significant difference that we found was, you know, first looking in the warfarin group, that patients had a greater odds of having a safety-promoting behavior in the intervention group compared to both the national group and the Alabama-West Virginia group. And the way that the group time variable was calculated was that in the comparison group, it stayed at zero, and then after intervention in the intervention group, it increased, you know, one for quarter one, you know, two for quarter two. And so in the first two quarters after the intervention, they had about a 4% greater odds of having a safety-promoting behavior in the intervention group. And the next quarter, it was at 8%. And then we found that our results were really driven by the warfarin NSAID. Sorry, TDP-11 is warfarin and NSAIDs. And where, you know, again, intervention versus national group, 4% greater odds in the first two quarters, and then, but in the intervention group compared to the West Virginia-Alabama group, it was a 13% greater odds. It was a little discouraging to look at 26 targeted drug patterns and only find really one that was significant. At the same time, it was, like I said, the program was evolving. It was nice to see that there were differences when we were able to compare. It wasn't just secular trends. And we also probably under-identified safety-promoting behaviors. Another part of this analysis, we looked at chart abstraction. We had a pilot chart abstraction, and we found that physicians actually were counseling patients, were putting the patient medication list in the chart and referring to that and things like that. So there may be other safety-promoting behaviors that they're performing that we're not finding in the claims data. We also weren't able to control for a lot of factors that we would have liked to, but we're able to control for the patient's age, sex, and general comorbidities. So we think that the program may be having a small impact on physician behavior because we did see an increase in warfarin and NSAID safety-promoting behaviors. We're probably not capturing all of them. And so the final take-home, I think, is that the early implementation of this program was associated with improved safety for patients who have the warfarin and NSAID targeted drug pattern. And I'm just going to go ahead and if anybody wants to discuss, I think that the MINOR-X program is sort of a precursor to medication therapy management, but it seems to me that a lot of the features of quality medication therapy management programs that were outlined by the Association of Managed Care Pharmacists. Thank you.